call the docket.
Robinson v. Copeland, Jackson Manuel, and Jimmy and Jackson, the Fox Council, beginning board after you.
Madam Clerk?
Yes, sir.
We're going to call Mount Aldi first.
Mount Aldi v. Sanchez, Virginia, Corporal,
You may proceed.
May it please the court. I'm Jim Campbell, and I represent Mount Aldi, the landowner in Loudoun County, in this conservation case. This case arises, and a dispute arises out of a single sentence in Article 2, Section 5, Roman numeral 1, found at page 295 of the appendix, of the summary judgment appendix. That sentence reads, no more than one new opening or clearing, and no new opening or clearings greater than 1,000 square feet in the forest are permitted for non-commercial purposes, unless approved in advance in writing by the grantee as necessary to safeguard the acreage. Summary judgment was granted based upon the summary judgment record, although there were disputed material facts on that issue, and we contend that the reading of the conservation easement was simply flawed. First and foremost, before you get to Article 2, Section 5, Article 2, Section 3 identifies certain reserved rights in the area of this property where there was something called a riparian buffer. The place where the Indian Spring Trail has existed for several hundred years and where the earth disturbance by my client occurred is all within that riparian buffer. The riparian buffer limitations, by the way, Your Honor, I'd like to reserve 6 minutes for rebuttal. I forgot to do that.
All right.
It allows the landowner reserved rights to do certain things, even in the most sensitive area of this property, this riparian buffer. Allow them to remove, to disturb the earth. And what's important, if you look at Article 2, Section 3, Roman 2, it deals with limitations on earth disturbance. And the earth disturbance limitations carve out things that the property owner can do to govern his property. First, he can do forest management. He can remove dead and diseased trees. The disputed material facts here were that there were dead, windblown, and hemlock-infested trees that were removed. Second thing he can do is he can create and maintain existing trails or make new trails for horse trails foot trails for recreational purposes. Now, the circuit court granted summary judgment as if the phrase no more than one new opening or clearing referred to earth disturbance. In fact, he said that. On reconsideration, we asked him to fix the problem we perceived he created when he granted summary judgment. And he said that he drew the conclusion that the phrase new opening or clearing referred not to a place in the forest, as we submit it clearly says, but to earth-disturbing activity. Let's assume his reading was right, which I disagree with. What would be in the summary judgment record, which begins at page 221 through 209 through 948, 737 pages are there, about 39 pages. What is in the summary judgment record to show that this was a new opening, not an existing Indian Spring Trail the citizens of Loudoun County had enjoyed for several hundred years? Well, the answer is that there's nothing in the summary judgment record that shows an uncontested fact that it's a new opening.
So suppose you're right on your reading of the deed. What fact-finding is needed other than, one, the fact-finder would have to figure out what was reasonably necessary, right?
Correct.
And would also the fact finder not have to figure out what is a road versus a trail? Because your opponent argues this was a road. That term appears in the deed. Trail also appears in the deed, but those terms aren't defined.
Correct.
Would we need fact finding on that?
Well, if
whether this was a road as they assert or a trail as you assert?
Absolutely. I think it is a disputed issue of fact. You know, in the record we have 90-some photos that we gave to the trial court at summary judgment, showing both what it looked like when the trees were being removed and what it looked like afterwards.
So
I think it's a trail, but I think it's a contested fact since they didn't define. Maybe in 1857 that was a road, but in 2017 that's not a road for certain.
So what else? So we have reasonable, what was reasonable, reasonably necessary. What is a road versus a trail? Are there other things that would have to be developed factually?
Well, whether it's new or whether it's existing. Because the issue that the trial court said, okay, this is a new opening or clearing. Our position is that this is not a new opening or clearing. It's an existing opening or clearing.
But the deed allows your client to build a horse trail.
Correct.
So presumably that would be a new, that could be a new trail.
That's correct. So I guess there's a factual dispute as to whether it's a road, a horse trail, a foot trail, or a recreational trail, as the easement reserves the right.
Right.
But those are all contested facts. And if you look at the settlement...
I'm just trying to figure out, if it goes down on remand, what would be left to resolve?
Those things.
Right.
Whether it's new or existing, okay. And whether it was a reasonable exercise of the reserve rights, with, I hope, instruction from this court, that since this is a conservation easement, and we did not have the guidance of White Cloud when we tried this case, because your decision on White Cloud came out 2 months and 2 weeks after the final order in this case, that those restrictive rights should be narrowly construed, consistent with White Cloud.
Right, but here it's a little different because the deed itself suggests a different way of interpreting the instrument.
It does, but the deed itself in White Cloud contains exactly the same information. It's kind of a boilerplate for conservation easements these days. And this court took a different position, even though that same language implying broad interpretation was in the White Cloud easement. I think the easements are almost identical with respect to those facts. But it is clear what we're hoping to get from this proceeding is guidance. That, number one, you can't grant summary judgment when the question about whether or not something is reasonably necessary has to be determined by the finder of fact. And whether any of those reserved rights were exercised properly is all a question of fact. Secondly, I cannot reconcile the circuit court's decision that new opening or clearing means land disturbance. Now, the drafters of the conservation easement were concerned about earth disturbance. In fact, if you look at Article 2, Section 5, Roman 1 and 2, it talks about, as Article 2, Section 3, the reserve rights, it speaks expressly about no earth disturbance except for these several reasons: removing dead trees, removing diseased trees, creating pedestrian trails, equine trails.
So your point is that Article 2, Section 3, reserve rights for the riparian buffer, in context with Article 2, Section 5, means that new opening has to be a new place, a new site, not a repair or forest management of an existing site.
That's correct. And if the drafters wanted to say in this conservation easement, by the way, if you're going to exercise your right to create a horse trail or a pedestrian trail, if you're going to clear more than 1,000 square feet to accomplish that, you have to come to us first. But it doesn't say that. The reserve rights should be broadly interpreted, and the restrictive rights should be narrowly interpreted. I think it's well settled by this court, and I hope this court will find that a new opening is clearly in place, and the circuit court's interpretation of this plain language was simply flawed.
Can I ask you a question, counsel? Do you concede that the current opening now is about 10 feet by 1,000 to 1,200 feet?
No. The area that we disturbed, there, if you look in the summary judgment record, I'll get you the...
I've seen the photographs where it shows your client walking down with a 10-foot yardstick.
Some places the disturbance is 4 or 5 feet, and some places the disturbance is much wider than that. But the photographs begin at...
Well, my point is the current clearing is certainly well in excess of 1,000 square feet.
Well, there's no question about that. The opening, the existing Indian Spring Trail...
The way it sits now.
We submit, before we did our conduct and afterward, is 4 to 6 to 8 feet, depending on where you are, and it travels for about 1,100 feet. But the limitation of 1,000 square feet deals with something in the forest where you remove the vegetation and you can see the sky.
Right, it appears in the clause as dealing with forest management.
Correct.
Not creation of trails or whatever.
This is a concept of clear cut, which we all know about from other forestry cases. I'll reserve the balance of my time. Thank you very much.
May it please the court, I'm Alan Croft, with the law firm of Canis and Willard, representing the Appalachian Land Trust of Virginia. Let me address some of the comments or the questions raised by some of the justices. First of all, what we're dealing with here is earth-disturbing activity in a protected area. Under General Provisions Article 5, Section 2, this primitive footpath is a protected area. And what is most significant here...
But is it not within the riparian buffer of Article 2, Section 3?
Well, the footpath is within the riparian buffer. So you have an area within the riparian buffer. And I submit that the more restrictive terms of the easement dealing with the primitive footpath would control over the more general. So what you have is the parties agree by the language of this provision of the easement that there shall be limited activity in that area. And more particularly, there was a conveyance of all rights that the grantor had to construct or maintain that particular area.
But that's not correct. I mean, the expressly excluded from within the buffer strip is the right of the landowner to remove individual trees and to construct trails, right?
But not over the area where all.
But
the
it doesn't say. But it doesn't say that. Where does it say that? Where does it? Where does that exclusive language for the Indian Spring Trail appear?
Article 5, Section 2.
Okay. Point me to any language that provides for exclusivity.
By virtue of the conveyance. It's more than that. Not only is there a conveyance, and I'll read the language, the grantor hereby conveys to the grantee the right to construct and maintain primitive footpath for pedestrian travel only across the area generally known, and that is the trail, because it's shown in Exhibit A. But more particularly, the only right that the grantee, that the grantor, in this case Mount Aldi Reserve, was the right to access that. And more particularly, they could not even allow pedestrians to use that trail. That right was reserved to the grantee of the Land Trust of Virginia. And what's most important here is that regardless...
I get that your client has the right to construct and maintain this trail and to grant access to pedestrians. What I don't get is why that would be exclusive. Why wouldn't it say that?
Because it's a conveyance without any reservation on the part... If my client has the exclusive right, by virtue of the conveyance, to construct or maintain, and there's no other reference to anything being reserved to the grantor, I believe that clearly indicates...
But the language says construct and maintain, as if the maintenance refers back to a footpath that they will construct, a new footpath, not the maintenance of an existing footpath. It's not an or.
Correct.
So why isn't this referring to a completely different footpath that the grantee may construct?
Well, it's referring to the historic primitive footpath, and that we know by Exhibit A is the same footpath where the construction took place. There was only one historic primitive footpath.
Why would it not be equally construction of this to say this allows them to construct a new path, to construct.
Well, it says...
To construct.
To construct and maintain a primitive footpath.
Right.
For pedestrian. But it's the one... There's only one primitive footpath.
I understand that. So that's why I'm asking, why wouldn't this language be construed to mean they can construct a new footpath independent of the path that exists currently? To construct.
Who I'm sorry.
Your client.
The grantee.
Conveys to the grantee the right to construct and maintain a primitive footpath.
In the area specifically identified on Exhibit A. I
guess we're just missing each other. Go ahead.
But really what's involved here, and we can't lose sight of it, although counsel for Mount Aldi claims that the reason for doing this construction was in furtherance of proper management property management practices, forestry management practices. That's not what occurred. And in the...
Well, what he said at the very beginning, now he said different things, but one of the things he said at the very beginning was, I want to construct a horse trail, to connect these different tourist attractions. I want to build a microbrewery and this and that.
But he can't do that. He can't. First of all, he can't construct anything in the primitive footpath.
Well, okay.
More particularly, though, whatever he does, there's a restriction on the amount of land disturbance that can occur. And the suggestion that what was going on here was nothing more than removing dead and diseased trees is belied by all of the admissions that I've referenced in the record. Clearly, what was going on here is Mahalvi, through its managing member, Jack Andrews, was doing something to benefit the Aldi Park development. He wanted an amenity. First, he wanted an equestrian trail. And when he realized that that was prohibited, and one of the emails he sent my client, he recognized this provision, Article 5, Section 2. And he said, well, okay, maybe it's your obligation, or you have the right to do it, but I'm doing it for you. And then when he realized that that wasn't acceptable, then he switched gears and said he's doing a logging road.
Yeah, but as a general rule, those kinds of arguments about motive and intent are for fact finders, not for summary judgment, where a single genuine issue of material fact renders summary judgment inappropriate.
I would agree with that, but you also have admissions, and you're bound by those admissions, and a party cannot approbate and reprobate.
You mean evidentiary admissions or a request for admission responses?
I'm sorry?
What kind of admissions are you talking about?
Admissions based upon documents, extrajudicial documents that were submitted to the prior effect, were accepted by the prior effect, and have not been disputed here. So we have admissions, and in addition to the claim that it was a logging road, there are also admissions, judicial admissions, that he did construct the road. So the long and the short of it is, what was going on here was not, as suggested by counsel now, a lawyer-driven claim.
I mean, for at least most of, if you track paragraph by paragraph, the complaint and the answer, the complaint repeatedly says road, 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 and then you look at the answer, deny, 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 deny.
Except for the paragraphs 30, 32, and 37.
And in the complaint itself, it talks about how he said he was building a trail. That's what he told representatives of LTV when he was out there with the machinery. So in the complaint itself, you have the defendant saying, I'm building a trail.
Initially, he claimed it was a trail, a horse trail. Then he backed off that when he recognized that he did not have the right to do it.
So why aren't these contradictions for the fact finder to resolve?
Well, but a party is bound by those.
But they're inconsistent statements. Why would we pluck out one statement and say, oh, well, now you're stuck with that one?
Because under the six provisions of the easement that I've identified, there are other violations that occur. And constructing a road in the manner in which it was done, where you're affecting the topography of the property, that was prohibited without prior notice. This easement, in various points...
But if it's a trail, he can do that. If it's a road, he's got to give advance notice. Right?
The simple reality of this, Your Honors, is that the provision that Judge Horn relied upon, the provision in Section 2, Article 2, Subsection 5, specifically limited what could be done if you're creating a new opening or clearing. They're in the disjunctive.
In the context of forest management. So why would the instrument give him the right to build a trail with a one hand and take it away by saying you can't do that in a completely separate section dealing with forest management?
They're not... They can exist together. It's a limitation. It's a limitation on what can be done. Yes, you can do forest management, but you can't do it willy-nilly. You can't do it without any limitation. And the one limitation here that is so important is that it makes sense. If you're going to create an opening, you need to give the land trust notice.
But isn't that the whole question, whether or not a new opening or clearing was created, or whether or not an existing opening or clearing was simply cleaned out?
But the manner in which it was done is not selective pruning and trimming that is required by that section.
Well, that's a fact question.
This was a situation where Mr. Andrews just decided, for purposes of his development, and we know that from the documentation, he wanted this river wall. He wanted this equestrian experience. He wanted to benefit from the development that he was contemplating. And he went in there with mechanized equipment and violated the terms of easement. He did not have the right to do it. The most protected part of this property was a 200-year-old historic footpath. And the easement discusses that and suggests that there are restrictions because, in fact, control over that footpath was conveyed. It was conveyed to the land trust.
Council, is earth-disturbing activity synonymous with creating a new opening or clearing?
Earth-disturbing activity is what occurred here, and it's admitted, and that is the excavation and the cutting into the soil that occurred here. That's what earth-disturbing means. But there's no dispute because it was admitted by
Is there a problem with the fact that the court found that this was earth-disturbing activity, but then applied the notice requirement of Section 5?
No, I do not believe so. The argument that was put forth, the so-called Jerin argument, I think is a linguistics exercise. The simple reality is, and we're dealing with the clearing, the new opening or the clearing, the act of clearing, the verb, creates a clearing, the noun. And earth disturbing is the equivalent of clearing. There's no ambiguity
well,
there.
Well, clearing land isn't the same thing as creating a clearing in the forest.
In this particular case, it was, because by doing that, a clearing, an opening, was created.
Council, I'm sorry, have you answered?
Yes.
Let's go back to a simple property law concept. You're saying that if I convey an easement to a party, that it is an exclusive easement without me saying it's exclusive? That grantee has exclusive use of the property because they've been granted an easement on the property without my ever using the word exclusive in the document?
I believe the way this easement was worded, it represents its exclusivity for purposes of pedestrian travel.
Do you have...
on that path, if you will, the primitive footpath.
Well, where does it say that?
I believe the interpretation of this language, that the grantor hereby conveys to the grantee the right to construct and maintain the primitive footpath for pedestrian travel only.
Is that
the equivalent. And then that's
the equivalent of an exclusive use as opposed to a permitted use?
Well, but it does limit what the grantee can do. And it goes on further to say, the grantee is hereby conveyed the right to permit the public to enter into this area for non-intensive pedestrian-based outdoor recreation activities only. So in this particular case, by saying what the grantee's rights, the land trusts, I believe that it's indicating that the grantor is no longer retaining those rights. And here what happened with that announcement of the Aldi law, that beautiful scenic law, what the grantor here was doing, Mount Aldi, was trying to take away the right to control who could access the property. If the Land Trust of Virginia didn't want anyone to access the property, it was their right under the terms of the season.
Okay, let's go to the paragraph 5, the 1,000-foot limitation. You say that informs paragraph 3. What horse trail would only be 1,000 square foot? I mean, does that make sense to you that you would grant the right to give the ability, or actually reserve the right to build a horse trail, but then say it can only be limited to something less than 1,000 feet?
I'm not saying that if they built a horse trail somewhere other than where the primitive footpath was, that there would be a restriction. What I'm saying is that you have to give notice
But paragraph 3 is the 100-foot buffer strip.
Yes, but regardless of where this trail was built, if in creating that trail, in opening the ground, the forest for that, you cleared more than 1,000 square feet, you would have to give notice. That's all it's saying. It's not taking away the right of the grantor to create that trail, but you have to give notice, and notice was never given.
Well, where's the language in paragraph 3 that indicates that the 1,000-foot limitation in paragraph 5 under management of forest applies? I mean, paragraph 3 addresses riparian, but
paragraph 3 is the more general area, is a general statement of the riparian buffer. It's, I believe, the limitation of the 1,000-square-foot notice provision clarifies what can be done in the way of opening trails within the riparian buffer.
Okay, thank you.
Your time has expired.
Thank you.
Rebuttal?
It is clear from a plain reading of the conservation easement that forestry management, recreation, including equestrian trails, are the purposes and part of the easement. The other more obvious part that's not part of this dispute is they wanted the property owner be limited to how many new structures they can build, only one new residence, and where it would be located. They seek to have my client's reserved rights strictly construed when they should be broadly construed. Secondly, they seek to create a theory of exclusivity when the word exclusive doesn't appear anywhere in the instrument. And so I suggest to you he has it backwards. That if he is seeking to restrict my client's right to use his land, the language must be expressed, not implied. Because I think he all but said during this argument that the exclusivity with regard to this theoretical primitive footpath is something you should imply from all the language. I submit they would have to expressly state that as a matter of law. And as a matter of interpretation of a conservation easement. Secondly, his argument regarding new opening, this case for us, for Mount Aldi, will rise and fall on whether there are disputed material facts, and I think there clearly are, and I think the court understands that. But I want the court to understand that my belief is that the standard of review is limited to pages 209 to 948 in the appendix. Because most of what my colleague says about admissions in his papers comes from stuff not before the trial court at summary judgment. In fact, at trial, at summary judgment, the LTV listed 12 separate alleged undisputed facts. That 1,000 square feet had been cleared in the forest and it was a new opening was not one of the alleged disputed facts. They latched on to our admission that we cleared dead trees and improved to make passable an existing trail, and that's what they're trying to extrapolate into a violation of that section.
It will latch on to an evidentiary admission as opposed to a response to a request.
No, I think it was a sentence in my summary judgment brief that we acknowledged that from the beginning of the trail behind the fire department to the about 200 feet past the Indian Spring Trail, we cleared the trail of dead and windblown trees. And so that's where the use of the word cleared became the verb that the trial court hung around my neck, so to speak, and would not accept that it's a place. So we ask you to conclude.
Can I also ask you one question before you conclude? Who's going to make this decision? I understand that there was an advisory jury. How is that supposed to work in this
case? Well, the advisory jury ended up the trial court said he wanted an advisory jury. First of all, Mr. Andrews demanded a jury on the tort claim, and that was denied. The court gave an advisory jury, and
well, the tort claim is gone now. Is that right?
It is. It
okay. So is there entitlement to a jury now?
The factual issue? I think an advisory jury would be appropriate in this case. Again, it's up to the trial court. The trial court could try this without a jury if the trial court wished. But the trial court thought the facts were disputed on damages. enough that he wanted to have citizens decide that issue. And, of course, it was very flawed because $90,000 of the judgment was against Mr. Andrews on the tort that was later vacated, and then the trial court added that to the amount of the judgment.
But I think $25,000. That error was rejected. That assignment of error was rejected, I guess.
Pardon?
Your challenge of that was
rejected.
That's
correct.
But, so what additional facts would be brought to the judge's attention in this case if we remand the case?
Number one, they would have the burden of proving it. They're the plaintiff, that it's a new opening, not an existing opening, the Indian Spring Trail. That would be part of their burden. Our defense would be that it's not a new opening, it's an existing opening. And then the question would be, was it reasonable to use machinery to do the four things we think we're permitted to do? Number one, we think we're clearly permitted within the riparian buffer to remove dead and diseased trees. I don't think there's any factual dispute that there were dead and diseased trees, but maybe there is a dispute. Now, number two, whether we can use machinery to create a pedestrian trail, a foot trail. Number three, whether we can use machinery to create a horse trail.
Let me ask you a question about the opening. Is there any limitation on how far you can expand in one opening and not become a new opening? In other words, if you've got an opening of 3 by 5 feet, can you expand it to 10,000 by 10,000? And not be able
to I think if it's clearly a new opening, I think there'd be some limitation on it. But in this instance, there are photographs in the record that show the trail, and they call it a forested trail in the documentation report. In fact, I marked it. I'll get that for you in just a second. And if you match up the photographs that we took, for instance, at the Joint Appendix 339 and 340, there are photos of a forested trail before we did those. We did our work. And if you look at the 70 photos, we took a photo of every 50 feet you can match up where the locations are. And what you notice is there aren't mature trees in the width of the current trail in either photograph, in other words. So we think the big factual dispute, this is an existing trail, which we have the right to maintain and even improve for those reserve rights. So we ask you to find that our reserve rights should be broadly interpreted to allow us the use as reserved, consistent with the common law of this common law. Thank you so much.
Call the next.